Hello there, my darlings. I've had quite the exciting week. I've stitched my man together and managed to insert the brain into his skull. Well, it wasn't easy, but he's looking quite the dish. Now, I just have to switch on this machine and the blood will start pumping around his body and he should wake up. Oh, I'm so excited. Here goes. Oh, he's breathing. He's opening his eyes. Well, hello.
Why, hello.
And what is your name?
Whatever you want it to be, my dear.
Ooh, this could be quite fun. I'll carry on talking to this gorgeous specimen while you listen to our stories.
My son was 2 years old when all of this started. I was sitting in the living room on the couch watching my son play with his ball, and it had rolled into the dining room. I looked at him and told him to go and get it. He started crying and said no, that there was a man in the dining room that was going to get him. As you could imagine, I jumped off the couch and ran to the dining room where there was no one there. Yet my son was crying, saying he was standing in the corner. I told him there was no man in the dining room. I grabbed his ball and went back to the living room. I had forgotten all about that encounter until he was around 3 years old, and my twin sister and our friend was at my house. Our friend kept bugging my son, wanting to play hide and seek. She told him she was going to hide in our basement so that he couldn't find her. All of a sudden, in a different voice than he usually talked, he pointed to the basement door and told my friend if she goes downstairs, the girl down there will kill her. I was shocked for one because he had told her in a deep, growling voice instead of his sweet baby voice. So I asked him who he was talking about, and he told me her name was Sarah. Then he went on to explain that Sarah was dead. I asked, how had she died? He then told me that she had died in a car wreck at the age of 16. She had been with her parents until they had hit a tree, and then the car had went through a house. I couldn't believe what he had just told us. A couple of days later, we went to eat at a Mexican restaurant. We went to the restroom before we left, and my son told my twin sister not to go in the bathroom stall next to her one, because Sarah was using that bathroom. My friend jokingly said, well, how did Sarah get here? My son told her she sat in between me and you in the back seat on the way here. I thought maybe he just has a good imagination at his age. So a couple of months later, he grabbed my hand and told me, Mummy, come here, your friend wants to say hi to you. I went into his bedroom holding his hand. I asked, where is he? My son points and says, he is standing right there, Mummy. Then my son tells me, Jamie says to tell you not to be sad anymore. I asked him where he had heard that name from. My son says he is standing right there. That's what he told me to tell you. Jamie was my ex-boyfriend. We had dated in middle school and then again in high school. In high school, he had been in a car wreck and had passed away. A couple of weeks later, we were going through some old photo albums and my son points to a picture and says, I know that man. I asked him, how do you know him? My son told me he comes and talks to him. I then explained that the man couldn't talk to him because it was a picture of my father-in-law and he had passed away before me and his dad had gotten together. My son says, Mum, I do talk to him. He told me about taking Daddy for rides in his old Ford truck when Daddy was little. I asked my husband about it later and he confirmed that his dad had an old Ford truck that they used to go riding in. Then me and my husband were sitting in the living room a couple of weeks later and we hear our son laughing and talking to someone. We both get up and walk into his room. I asked, who are you laughing at? He turns to us and says, I'm playing with Mamma. My husband's mother had passed away when our son was 2 years old. I asked him what she was saying to him. He then threw his hands up and said, hey. That was exactly what she used to do every time he walked in the room before she passed away. My husband had to be at work at 5 a.m. every morning, so I would always get up, make him breakfast and make his lunch to take to work with him. He leaves for work and I'm sitting in the living room and I see something in our bedroom. I get up to see what it is, and I see two girls standing in the mirror brushing their hair. I'm thinking I'm just seeing things, then I rub my eyes and no, they are still standing there. After they notice that I'm looking at them, they disappear. I ask my son what they wanted. He tells me that Sarah came for him and that she isn't leaving until she gets him. I was so scared after he told me that. The scary part is my son was a healthy kid for the longest time. Then all of a sudden he started having stomach problems. The doctors have done all kinds of tests and can't find a reason for why he's sick. He's now 14 years old. And when he was 11, he started having seizures. Of course, doctors have done the tests and couldn't figure out what was causing him to have the seizures. They told us that usually one side of the brain triggers a seizure, but both sides of his brain show activity for the seizures. That being said, we moved out of the home we had been living in, and he got better, so I don't know if it was the house causing his illness or whatever was in that house. Unfortunately, because of circumstances, we've had to move back into that house. His stomach problems have come back. Me and my husband split up about 8 months ago, and that's the reason we moved out of the house in the first place. Strange things are happening again. For starters, my son's stomach problems have come back, and it seems to be worse now than the first time he had unexplained stomach problems. We've also been hearing strange voices in the house. I'll be laying in bed at night and hear a man laughing. I'll wake my son and husband up, and the laughter stops. Me and my husband only smoke in certain parts of the house, but you can smell cigarette smoke really bad, as if someone is smoking right at that moment. And we have started to hear noises coming from our basement. I'm sure not going down there to see what the heck it is. Then last night, we were getting ready for bed, and I was standing in my son's room. We have a door that is connected to our son's room so that we can keep an eye on him because of the strange things that have happened. My husband was standing in our room and I asked him if he just saw our bed move, like someone had sat down on it and it just moved a little. He said yes and starts to look under the cover to make sure neither one of our dogs had snuck under the covers while we weren't looking, but there was no dogs in the bed. I woke up last night to a man laughing again. It's 5:10 a.m. as I'm writing this. My husband has left for work and I'm wide awake because I'm scared to go back to bed. If anyone knows of any ways to help, please let me know. When I was 16 years old, I decided to surprise my parents with a bouquet of flowers for Valentine's Day. We've always celebrated this as a family holiday rather than a romantic one. I didn't have a car to drive to a florist, but my high school was within walking distance of a hospital boasting a gift shop that sells floral arrangements. Between classes during the week of Valentine's Day, I set off for the hospital by my lonesome, cutting across campus to walk through a network of side roads populated with specialty doctor's offices that kept odd hours, the sort of buildings where travelling doctors mainly hold surgery consultations or perform small procedures a few times a month. The trip there passed without incident. As I was walking back through said deserted roads with a vase of flowers in tow, I noticed an unkept 1990s car close behind me. While my memory of the car is hazy, I am left with the impression that there were at least two men whose faces I couldn't see. Initially, I thought that the driver was simply afraid of hitting me, the reason they weren't passing by, so I made a point of dramatically trudging further into the grassy shoulder of the road, demonstrating to them that they could safely drive ahead. They still refused to pass me by, continuing to creep along at a slow pace. Beginning to suspect that the driver was more interested in me than a destination, I began to walk faster. The car confirmed my suspicions by matching my speed. Despite the impracticality of my shoes and the threat of spilling water over my vase, I commenced to run as fast as I possibly could. They hit the gas and again matched my speed. I realized at this point that the car was following me, that there was no one in sight to notice, and I needed to get away. I bolted into the first parking lot that I saw. The car turned in after me. Despite there only being two or three cars in the spacious front parking lot, and there being no other sign of activity at the office, this car did not stop to park at the numerous spaces available there. The driver instead opted to pursue me into the partially under construction back portion of this lot, behind the office. It passed away available parking space to corner me against a pile of debris and rubble from the construction, coming to a diagonal stop less than 3 feet away. Before anyone could emerge from the vehicle, I somehow managed to scale the small prominence of rubble against my back, vase in hand, and jumped from its peak to land painfully on the other side, which fortunately was a plot of undeveloped land within sight of my high school campus. I took a quick peek back over my shoulder to see if they were still in pursuit, but the car had sped off after I reached the top of the rubble pile and was now nowhere in sight. They had not parked in the lot at all. They had no business in there. The driver was following me. I sprinted at top speed and didn't stop until I was soaked with sweat in the dead of winter and panting in the student lounge among my classmates, who didn't seem to give a damn when I told them, possibly because our hometown is supposedly a human trafficking capital and the crime rate is outrageous. Although I am convinced that this was something more informal than human trafficking, as the dilapidated car suggested poverty, and I have read human trafficking usually arises through grooming and not being snatched off the streets. In retrospect, I should have told an adult, alerted campus security, and called the non-emergency line at the local police station. But I was young, foolish, insecure, and afraid of getting in trouble for leaving campus when I didn't have a signed permission form permitting me to do so. I kept trying to convince myself that I had misread the situation or was overreacting. I don't know what I even would have told the police if I had called them, as I was entirely ignorant on the subject of cars and couldn't have identified the make of it if I'd been asked, and I couldn't see the faces of the occupants. I was also worried that my parents would restrict my already extremely limited freedoms if they knew I had been in any danger. I feel horrible for having never told anyone, and earnestly hope that my secrecy hasn't led to someone being hurt or killed. I believe the only missing people aside from runaway children or elderly adults with dementia in the city right now, though, are men, aside from one woman a few decades ago.
This is a story from about 14 years ago. I was 8 years old at the time, and I'm 22 now. When I was 8 years old, my mom and dad split. I would stay at my mom's on the weekend in the city of Wilmington, California. My dad lived in Torrance, which wasn't too far away. However, the times I would get to see my mom were very minimal, meaning I would only see her a couple days out of the month. For those of you that don't know, Wilmington, California used to be a holding point for soldiers back in the American Civil War. The drum barracks are still there to this day. However, now it's a city full of gang violence. At the time, when I used to be there with my mom, the gang activity was pretty high, but it's gone down just a little. Well, the gangs are still around today, and it's still a relatively unsafe neighborhood to walk around at night, but it has its good days, such as car shows and the Wilmington parades. But to be real, the city has a pretty fucked up past of murders, suicides, kidnappings. But some of the craziest experiences I've had happened in my grandmother's house, which was where my mom was living at the time. So with all of that being said, here's the story. My grandmother lived on the street Hyatt Avenue, which is a street owned by one of the gangs and is also right next to the train tracks. Wilmington's neighborhoods consist of a front house and a back house to most parts. My grandmother lived in the front house, and we had an old friend who lived in the back named Gilbert. Across the street, I had a friend who I'll call Jose. Jose was just a couple years older than me, and I would invite him over to my house all the time so we could hang out and play with the plastic guns that the street vendors would bring. We would mostly hang out in the back parking lot, which divided my grandmother's house and Gilbert's house, and was a relatively good size for the two kids to play in. One day, Jose came up with the brilliant idea for both of us to go play near the train tracks. Keep in mind that these train tracks are in a pretty big area, so there's a lot of dirt that surrounds them. So for us to get hit by a train, we would have to be standing right on the tracks. But there was just enough area around them for us to play. On this particular day, Gilbert wasn't home, so we snuck behind his house through a hole in the fence which led straight to the train tracks. Once we were there, we decided to walk a little further down the train tracks and talk about the shootings we'd heard and how we thought one of our neighbors was in the gang. At this particular time, I distinctly remember Jose telling me that he would be, quote, down to shoot back at anybody who shot at his house if he had a gun. Before he could say anything else, I stopped him mid-sentence and pointed at a memorial site for what I assumed was a fallen gang member. He looked at it in awe and proceeded to move closer to it. The mural had a picture of the man with bandanas tied on the fence surrounding the portrait, with the folded bandana and clothing right in the middle of it, surrounded by candles. I asked him, "What the hell are you doing?" Because he started digging through the clothing and the bandana. As he scuffled through, he stopped, and I watched his eyes grow big and look at me with a shocked face. I asked him, "What is it?" And he pulled out a small snub-nosed revolver. It had been wrapped inside the bandana on top of the clothing. I said, "Holy shit," and looked at it in amazement. The revolver was empty. He starts laughing and pointing it around, pulling the trigger, and all I can remember hearing is the clicking coming from the revolver. It was almost as if this kid prayed for a gun and manifested it into his hands, because guns seemed to be the something that amazed him. What seemed like forever being on those train tracks, we started to head back. Before we proceeded, though, I asked him, "Dude, are you gonna put that gun back?" Without even thinking twice, Jose says, "Fuck no, I'm taking this home." I didn't even want to argue with him. I just wanted to go back home. There was something off about the train tracks that day, and it felt even worse after we saw that mural. Of course, at the time, I thought nothing of it because I was only 8, but now that I remember, I can definitely feel it to this day. Once we got back to the hole we entered through, Jose stuffed the revolver into his shorts and told me he was going to go home and take a nap. I said okay, and just decided to go back into my grandma's and play with my Legos. Before I proceed with the story, please let me give you the layout of my grandmother's house. When you enter through the front door, you're already standing in the living room. To your left is my grandmother's room, and forward is the kitchen leading back to the back hallway. When you enter the back hallway, to the front of you is the back door, to the left of you is the vanity area and the restroom. Once you're in the vanity area, to the left of you is the second bedroom, and when you enter that bedroom, to your right is a small hallway leading to the last bedroom, which was my mother's. Fast forward to about 9:30 p.m. I'm already really tired and decided that I would just go to sleep. I pack up all of my toys and go straight to my mom's room to fall asleep. It's about 1:30 a.m. and I woke up for no reason. There was this ringing in my ears that wouldn't go away, and there was a really unsettling feeling in my room. I tried to wake up my mom thinking I had a nightmare and she wouldn't even budge. I decided, since I'm already awake, to go into the kitchen and grab a Jell-O. I really wish I wasn't a stupid-ass kid. I should have just decided to close my eyes and go back to sleep. But when I walked into the kitchen, all I could see was a silhouette of a huge man standing in the kitchen just staring at my direction. I stood there in shock. I honestly don't remember if I pissed myself or not. All I could remember thinking to myself was, why is this man here and why did this person decide to target our house? After standing there for what seemed like hours, the man started breathing very heavily, as if he was really angry. I turned around and ran straight back to my mom's room trying to shake her awake, but she wouldn't wake up. I'm thinking maybe I'm in a nightmare right now and maybe I'm still sleeping, and this is just a really bad dream. How is my mom not waking up to this? How is my grandma not awake? I remember my mom having a really big flashlight in the room, so I grabbed it and decided to go back to the kitchen and hold this big-ass flashlight like a baseball bat, ready to get this guy for breaking into my house. Yeah, I was a dumbass kid. Before I could enter the vanity area, I got stopped in my tracks. This man was in the second bedroom, just standing there. I screamed so loud, I'm surprised my neighbors didn't hear me. I'm also surprised for some reason that my folks are still sleeping. I turned on the flashlight so I could see this bastard's face, and what I saw still haunts me to this day. When I turned on the flashlight and I shined them at his legs, there was blood on him. When I proceeded upwards, his torso There was so much blood. I honestly don't know if that shirt was red or if it was white. It was just stained with a lot of blood. When I proceeded to his head, this is the terrifying part. Half of it was missing. I could just remember a gurgling sound coming from his mouth. The top of his goddamn head was gone. Basically, all I could see was just chunks of skin and brain hanging off his head. I honestly can't think of any better description. Finally, after what seemed like minutes, though, it was only a split second. I dropped the flashlight, ran straight to my mom, grabbed her and shook her as hard as I could, screaming and crying, telling her that there's a man in our house, and she finally wakes up pissed off at me for screaming. I told her that there was a man who was hurt and needed our help. She immediately got up and asked where he is, and I told her he was in the second bedroom. When she walked into the second bedroom, there was nobody there. She went to the kitchen, to the living room, even my grandmother's room, and still, nobody. She checked the front doors, the back doors, they were all locked. She looked at the living room window, which wasn't broken, although it had to be for somebody to get in. And everything was locked and closed as if nobody had ever touched it. I sat in disbelief because I know for a fact I physically saw this man standing in our kitchen and in our second bedroom. I couldn't even say anything. As a matter of fact, I was crying, traumatized even. It was so real, yet unreal at the same time. I can't explain the terror I felt because it was just absolutely insane. My mom came back to the room, not quite upset at me, but she knew I was terrified, so she let me turn on the TV and watch one of my movies until I fell asleep. When I woke up the next day, I still couldn't shake the feeling of dread off my shoulders. I was still kind of shaken up about it. I'm pretty sure that the man that was in my house that night was the spirit of the man whose mural we pretty much vandalized and stole from, and he was not happy about it. From that day on, I never saw the spirit of that man again. I would only go to see Jose maybe twice after that day and never again. I'm not even sure if he lives in the same house anymore. Years would go by, and my mom would then move to East Los Angeles with my stepdad and my grandma, who would proceed to live in Wilmington until she passed away just recently. I would then find out by my mom that the house had a really shitty history. The house had many deaths happen inside of it. My mom told me that before my grandmother moved in, a man died of a heart attack in the living room, and both of my uncles committed suicide in there as well. Both of my uncles shot themselves in the head. So I'm not sure if the spirit I saw was the man on the mural or of one of my uncles. To be honest, either way, I don't want to know. I've never met either of those uncles, nor have I ever seen a picture of them. And to be honest, I can't remember the face of the man on the mural to match the face of the man in the house. Half of his head was missing, and he was basically unrecognizable. Telling this story to others has been met with great skepticism and a lot of shit talk between me and those I've told it to. You don't have to believe the story as a matter of fact. I wouldn't blame you, because I probably would react the same way if you were telling me this story. It's 2021, and social media is huge, unfortunately. My friends follow these pages on Instagram that show rival gang members kicking down candles of fallen enemies and disrespecting their murals. My advice? If you ever see a mural, whether it's of a gang member or someone who has died from a car accident, just pay your respects and walk away. Or you may have an incident like this happen. You may not believe in the paranormal now, but trust me, something will definitely shake your belief. My grandmother's house has a terrible past. As a matter of fact, most of Wilmington does, and I'd like to consider my grandmother's house the horror house. I've seen a lot more things besides this in that house and have experienced them firsthand. I'm not the only one. I'm sure many people who live around the city could tell you some of their horror stories in their houses, because I honestly think so many houses in Wilmington are haunted. I have family who lives all around the city and tell me that they have ghostly activity. Friends, even. And to be honest, though I'm pretty rational when it comes to stories like this, I believe every single one of them.
I grew up in Texas. I still live here along with my family that will be mentioned in this story. When the 2007 recession hit, my father lost his job. It was a management job that paid well. We lived in a comfortable but slightly country area outside of Lockhart, Texas. With our income at a halt, we lost our home and had to move. My parents found a trailer park with a two-bedroom for rent. A little cramped for our family of five, but we had no other choice. The man we rented from was crooked for other reasons. But he's not the disturbed landlord this story revolves around. We lived in that trailer for a few years before needing to move out for reasons I was too young to remember. I was 11 years old when my parents began house hunting again. Down the road from the trailer park was a cul-de-sac of land. There was a business in the center of this land called the Why Not Party House. That was a bar or wannabe club, I suppose. Considering I was a child, I never rented the building. There were a few houses and trailers scattered around different parts in this secluded circle. A worn-looking trailer was for rent. The man renting it, Mr. Dole, was an elderly man who couldn't have been younger than 65 or so. A few things to note about this trailer. It has old stone steps leading up to the front door. There was a bunk bed in one of the bedrooms and a somewhat functioning air hockey table. The master bedroom had a queen-size bed, and there was carpet in the kitchen, which I always found quite strange. The back door was nailed shut and completely unusable. If that wasn't enough to make you say nope, then let me say it also had a mice problem. My family is working class, my mum is disabled, and with my father out of work, we only relied on her disability check. We had no choice but to rent out this trailer or be homeless. The entire deal was strange and honestly sad that this was the position we were in. But my parents rented out this trailer on the agreement of words only. There was no official lease that was signed, or any sort of legal document that proved we were renting from this man. Before we moved into the trailer, Mr. Dole took it upon himself to build a new deck for us to replace the old steps. He even built a little picnic table for us to sit outside. As a child, it completely blew my mind this stranger could be so kind to craft these things without being asked or wanting money. It seemed like an act of pure kindness. A bad person wouldn't do that sort of thing, right? The first few weeks of renting from him went by without a hitch. The master bedroom had no light bulbs, and we weren't there long enough to change them, so my family and I all slept in the living room. Something about the bedroom with the bunk beds seemed scary to me. I'm unsure how my brothers felt, but they never slept in there either. As I mentioned previously, we relied on my mother's disability. Sometimes we were late on rent and had to pay late rent fees. Other than that, Mr. Dole would be very understanding about everything, despite being a little irritated. My mother's check hit every first of the month, which is also the month for bills. My mum, my father, and my older brother got into the car and drove into the city to take care of bills and get a money order for rent. I was left outside with my oldest brother. It was a time when we had no internet or cable, just VHS movies. I was in the hallway, playing my Wii, Twilight Princess to be exact. Something I need you all to note, we had no keys to this trailer. The only person with a set of keys was Mr. Dole, so we were unable to ever lock the trailer when we left. As I was playing my game, right in front of the door that was locked, I saw the knob turn. No knocking, the knob jiggled, and our landlord tried to pry the door open twice, but was unable to do so successfully. I just froze and realized it was him. He must have assumed no one was at home because the car was gone, but the door was locked, and I thought it was fine to continue playing my game. My brother was in the living room. We both heard this noise. At first I thought it was a dog barking, and my brother heard it too. But the longer we listened, we realized it wasn't an animal, but the sound of people yelling. My brother went to the front door to investigate the noises, and me being a scared child, I followed right behind him. Both of my parents were standing out in the yard, my mother shouting at our landlord, who was sitting on a farming vehicle. Not sure what the name of it was, I remember it had a very long piece attached to it. She was visibly angry, and her voice was laced with rage. My father was yelling at him too, but I don't remember anything that was said exactly. My oldest brother asked what had happened, and here's how it goes. My parents pulled up to our trailer with the money order for rent. When they did, they caught Mr. Dole backing up the farming vehicle against the door, the only exit in that trailer. My mother went into full protection mode, knowing her two children were stuck inside. She confronted him immediately. Luckily, he backed away from the door, but he was still operating this vehicle. I believe she threatened him. They had an exchange of words, and he whipped the vehicle around fast and aggressively close to my mother until he almost hit her with it. My parents were bewildered about what they had just witnessed. They didn't know what to do, so they called the police. When the police showed up and my parents explained the situation, it was no use because we had no legal agreement of renting out the trailer. The officers shrugged it off and said there was nothing they could do about it because no one was injured. Apparently, trapping two children inside a trailer that's a fire hazard isn't illegal. We only spent one last night in that trailer. We no longer felt safe there. We packed up as many things in our car as we could, but unfortunately didn't have the money to rent a moving truck for the rest of our furniture. We stored the belongings we took with us at my grandmother's house, and we rented a motel room. It was about a week later after this happened when we tried going back for the rest of our belongings. We wanted no confrontation with Mr. Dole, so we showed up to the trailer at night. It was dark inside and the porch light was off. My father and eldest brother went inside the trailer casually. Me and my mother and my older brother were waiting out in the car. It was no less than 5 minutes when my father and oldest brother ran out of the trailer with speed I've never seen before. They hopped up in the car and pulled out of there like some scene in an action movie, while my mum was terrified and demanding answers. Apparently, they went into the master bedroom first, which was an immediate right when you walked inside. They were going to grab a box of paperwork we had to leave behind when we left. They noticed something lying in the bed, not just lying there asleep, but completely naked. It was Mr. Dole, and right beside him was a gun. We never went back to that trailer. We never recovered the rest of our furniture that had sentimental value, belonging to family members both living and deceased. It's been almost a decade since this happened. My mother and I discuss it every now and then, but we're thankful that time is behind us. I can't help but wonder if all that abandoned furniture was the result of some other unfortunate family who had to leave everything behind, or had it taken from them forcefully.
Well, that's it for this episode's stories, sweeties. I've been getting to know my new friend, William. He's everything I asked for. Intelligent, witty, handsome. Oh, I know what I forgot to ask him. So, William, or can I call you Willie for short? What job do you do?
I investigate tax fraud.
Oh, how interesting. Where's that button? Well, it was nice meeting you anyway, dear. Ugh, another one bites the dust. See you next week.